From ABC, this is the 10% Happier Podcast. I'm Dan Harris.
This is a highly unusual version of the 10% Happier Podcast. The most times we've ever had to bleep any guest or guests ever, and probably forever, but well worth it. This is unusual in a variety of ways. Well, one way that I just want to highlight early on is that we kind of did it backwards, where we get to meditation at the very end. So let me just step back and tell the full story here. I've been kind of obsessed with music for a long time. In fact, the first thing I do every morning, it's just this deeply ingrained habit, is I look at, or among the first things I do is I look at the website Pitchfork, which every day they put up new reviews for records. And I don't know where I saw a review for the following band. I don't think it actually was on Pitchfork, but it was somewhere. I also look at the website Metacritic, where they aggregate reviews for movies and TV shows and new music. And I think that's probably where I saw the reviews for a band called Culture Abuse. And I had heard of them, actually, because they had done some really great songs with another band that I really like called Waves. And it's W-A-V-V-E-S, I think is how Waves spells their name. And so I started listening to their record. This was maybe a couple weeks ago. And I loved it. And I tweeted about it. I almost never tweet about anything other than my son or meditation. And I tweeted about it, basically just saying that this record is one of the few records I've heard in memory where literally every song is catchy. They come out of a pop punk tradition, more punk than pop tradition in San Francisco, which is a long history of a venerable history of punk music dating back to Green Day and beyond. So they're definitely on the heavier end, but you know, they sound a little bit like sort of a more cuddly Nirvana or The Strokes. But the album is fantastic, although, as you'll hear, I do fear on some level for them that the fact that I love them and I'm 47 years old and lame is not a good sign for them. But anyway, the record is fantastic. So I tweeted about it, not thinking it was going to go anywhere, but they wrote back with something jokey along the lines of, "Hey, man, you should put us on TV. We have a lot to say." And I just said, "Do you meditate?" And they said, "Yes." I didn't believe them, but they said yes. So I said, "Come on the podcast." On a lark, I said, "Come on the podcast." And they said yes to that. And so you'll hear the results. But after so it was only after loving the album and then after having a little random Twitter back and forth with them that I actually Googled them. So I didn't know anything about them. And when I Googled them, I found out I learned something really remarkable. So this is even after I invited them on the podcast is when I learned that what I think is kind of the headline of the story, or one of the headlines, which is the lead singer and the guy who writes all the songs, David, has cerebral palsy. And in fact, in the one interview I found with him, talked about how it wasn't until his late 20s, early 30s where he felt comfortable enough to play his songs in public because he was just worried what people would think of him. And it made me think, is there any band with any member who had, you know, prominently disabled? And I just couldn't think of any, although you'll hear in the interview that we do, I guess, mention the drummer for Def Leppard, but that's a while ago. And he didn't start out. He had an accident and lost an arm and then learned how to play. It was amazing what he did. But anyway, he's the front man of a band, and I can't think of any other example. And I think that's really incredible. And as you'll hear, he's an incredible person, and his story is remarkable, and as are the stories of many of his bandmates. I was a little worried going into the interview because I thought, what if I don't like them and I love their record so much? But they turned out to be phenomenally friendly and interesting. And let me say one other thing before we get to your calls, which is that my son, my 3-year-old son, Alexander, absolutely loves this band. And they're not kids' music by any stretch. In fact, there are some songs we can't play for him because of the language. But he really loves his band. We listen to it in the bathtub, and there's one song called Be Kind to the bugs that he's obsessed with, and I played around our house so many times that I can now recite it from memory. So great interview coming up, and you'll hear more of it in a second. Sorry for the unusually long intro, but let's get to the voicemails. My usual caveat, as you know, not a meditation teacher, not a mental health expert, just a reporter who likes to meditate. So don't take my answers too seriously. Here we go. Call number one.
Hi, Dan. Just starting out with meditation, and it's tough, but I think it's effective. But my question is, and you might have already covered this somewhere along the way, what is your thoughts and feelings on using antidepressants in conjunction with meditation? Thanks a lot.
Oh, you know, a lot of people, I get a little worried sometimes when I hear from people that, you know, they're looking to use meditation to get off medication. I'm not necessarily saying that's a bad thing, but I'm not anti-modern medicine. And if your physician and you agree that medication can be useful, I think it can be incredibly useful. And there, it's not either or. I mean, you can take medication and do talk therapy and get your physical exercise and enough sleep and eat well. You can do all of these things. And it all goes toward the same goal, which is making you saner. And so I think antidepressants, if you and your doctor are of a mind that it's effective in your case, absolutely go for it. And they've saved the lives of countless people. Now, are we over-medicated? You know, there are a lot of people who believe we are, and I think that's a problem worth discussing. But in an individual life, if you're working with a physician and you trust him or her, then I don't. There's no shame in that game. And if you've got depression, that is not your fault. It's, you know, the brain is an organ like any other organ, and sometimes they can be problematic. So, long way of saying, go for it if you're doing both at the same time. I think they can work really nicely in concert. Here's the second call.
Hi, Dan. This is Matt from Indianapolis, Indiana. Quick question for you. If you had to recommend one book or reading that you've come across around meditation or even more just classical Buddhism that you've read and studied over the last several years that you've gone deeper into your own spirituality, what book would you recommend or publication would you recommend to your readers and why? Thank you. Bye.
That's a toughie. Just one? I mean, I guess my show, I can do whatever I want, but I'll try to play by your rule. I guess I would go with, you know, again, with the caveat that there are probably 7 or 8 books that I really would recommend. If I was going to go with one, I would go with Why Buddhism is True by Stephen Batchelor. No, that's not. He wrote Buddhism Without Beliefs. There is another book called Why Buddhism is True by Robert Wright, which is phenomenal. But let me give that honorable mention. But Buddhism Without Beliefs is by Stephen Batchelor and is really written from the standpoint of somebody who knows a ton about Buddhism, has spent many, many years as a monk, but is not a person of faith. And just practice. He's the first person I ever heard say Buddhism is not something to believe in. It's something to do. And that really is, you know, the way I mean, there are people who practice Buddhism as a religion. I think that I have no problem with that. But for many of us secular Westerners or Westerners who are subscribers of another faith, Buddhism is, you know, really safe place because you can practice Buddhism without having to believe in anything. And Stephen does a great job. I do need to get Stephen on this podcast because he's written many great books. But that was the first book I read by him, and I think it's probably his most famous book. It's easy to read, short, and I think great and intriguing explainer for, you know, why it's worth training your mind in this tradition. And also Why Buddhism is True is a great book, too. That's a slightly longer book, slightly newer book by Robert Wright. And he's been on the podcast, and I recommend you listen to that podcast. So I guess I'm slightly cheating there. Okay, let's get to our guest this week. As mentioned, the band's name is Culture Abuse. The lead singer, this is the first voice you'll hear, and we spend most of the time with him, is David Kelling, although we do bring in the other members eventually. He really has quite an amazing story. And as I said at the beginning, we end up kind of circling back to meditation at the end. So this is a slightly different podcast in that sense. So, but give it a chance, because I think you're going to get a lot out of this. And I really think this is a phenomenal band, who's and that they're you're hearing a band that you'll be hearing a lot more about later on. And also, just fair warning, there's a phenomenal amount of bleeping that we had to do because of the swear words. But these are punk rockers, so give them a break. Anyway, here we go. Culture Abuse, David Kelling. I don't know where to start other than that I love your record. It's awesome. It really is awesome. I think I said this on Twitter. I have not heard a record in a long time where literally every single song is a hit. I mean, every song nails it. And usually people throw on either some sort of interstitial stuff or one really slow jam, or I don't know. But you guys just basically said, we're going to swing for it on every song.
Mm. Well, it's kind of crazy because we went into the studio with like 14 or 15 songs. And we played the record for our engineer and every song. And then like the first day he was just like, let's pick 10. And then was just kind of like, yeah, I feel like this one, pick 10. So there's like 4 or 5 more songs that didn't make the record that I personally now might have switched out a couple.
Are they put out an EP?
Yeah. Well, we didn't like, we just tracked it live.
Oh, I see. Know? So you didn't really finish
like
them.
And that was like part of the thing that was crazy about making the record. It was like working with someone who like, I mean, we like played the song once and you'd be like, yeah, I like this song and this song. And, you know, and you're like, no, like, listen to the song. You know, like I don't...
Yeah. So you think you ended up with the catchiest songs because somebody else was making gut decisions?
No, I think that even if we put out 15 song record, it still would have... You would still be all saying the same thing. Yeah.
So you... Are you writing all the songs?
For the most part.
For now.
I mean, like, and like, more of, like, the I'll write the, like, Bob Dylan Watchtower version and then give it to the band and then we play the Jimi Hendrix version. Gotcha. You know what I mean?
So they'll rough it up for you.
Yeah.
And probably do some editing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But so you're trying to, I mean, there's an ethos. I've been following whatever you want to call it, underground rock, punk rock, indie rock for most of my life, since some kid in sophomore year homeroom slipped me a mixtape with the Minutemen on one side and Sonic Youth on the other.
Hell yeah.
And there usually is this pressure in this world, you guys can tell me more about the world, to alienate the listener on some level, challenge the listener on some level. But you seem to like we have no problem just being catchy as hell, even though you've got, I mean, the sound is roughed up in a way that is, you know, that works. But you're not trying to, like, throw in a song that's just completely unlistenable.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of, like, the thing from the beginning of the band. It was, like, let's just, like, when we write a song or, like, we're learning a song or something, it was just, like, let's just make it easy, you know? And that's almost the thing that we, like, struggle with sometimes, or just to try to, like, if it doesn't feel natural, then we just don't do it. And then there's, like, there's a million songs so far that we've, like, started and just scrapped because it's like, meh, no. Like, but then the good ones, I mean, because there's the theory that, like, every song is, like, already written. And even when you, like, I feel like when I write a song and it's, like, a good one and a catchy one, it'll come out in, like, 10 minutes, you know, rather than, like the ones that you're like, oh, I just don't.
So if you're struggling, like, that's feedback.
If you're struggling, then it's not a Culture Abuse song. You know, and so much of, like, I feel like a thing of growing up, like, it as like a musician is like when you play in like your high school band, you want to like show everything that you can do. So the guitar player is like playing as much as he can and the drummer is like playing as much as he can and like, you know, everyone's just trying to like show how talented they are. When like now it's just kind of like, oh, let's just write something that someone could like bob their head to like the entire time and not have to be like these weird parts that you just get thrown off by.
But, you know, back in the day, I remember when Green Day, you guys are from San Francisco, when Green Day got popular, all the punk kids were, they sold out and their songs were too catchy. Do you get any feedback like you're too poppy, you're not punk enough?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I feel like people that are even like nice to us in person, like talk shit behind our back, you know, like, and totally, I feel like we're like, it's kind of weird coming from the Bay Area, because I almost feel like the Bay Area to punk rock is like country to Texas. Like, your country, if you leave Texas and you play country, you're like kind of disowned. And that's how I feel like being a Bay Area punk band. It's like, we're all good, like, when we're just in the Bay Area, but then as soon as we like left, then it's like, oh, those guys, you know?
Would it be a knock against you that somebody who's 47 and has a 3-year-old kid and is a network news anchor likes your band?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it would be. We should not release this.
We're in too deep, though. That's why we need a sitcom. We love Modern Family. Yeah. Okay. So that's why we're in. Yeah. We've already sold out a long time ago. So okay.
But I feel like I was going to defend myself, but I'm not. I don't want to get myself in too deep. But so tell me about this. You know, the order of operations here was, I heard the record. I think I don't even know why I downloaded. I must have read a review somewhere. Then I remembered that you had done these songs with Waves, another band, and I loved those songs. And so I thought, I'll listen to this record. And I loved it so much that I tweeted about it just for no reason whatsoever, other than just once in a while I moved to tweet about a record. And, I mean, it's pretty rare, and I did it in this case, and then we started talking on Twitter. And then it was only after I said you should come on the podcast that I started researching you on any level, and I came across this fascinating interview you gave. So I found this out later, but you talked a little bit about how you actually almost didn't play your songs publicly for a long time for a reason. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, like, my whole life I've been like writing like little poppy catchy songs, but then there was like, I don't know. It's like,
you like, talked about how that you were held back by some level of like self-disdain.
Oh, totally. I mean, like, it's weird, like, just putting it out there, especially, like, I just, like, devoted my life to, like, the punk rock scene, I guess, if you would, or being, like, a hardcore band, or being, like, so then it's, like, weird, like, because I play guitar, but I have cerebral palsy and it affects the right side of my body, so I'm left-handed, but I have to play the guitar right-handed. I can't hold a pick with my hand, so I just strum with like my fingers or pick with my thumb, and so I don't play guitar like that good or like in the classic sense of like playing guitar or like singing. I don't know, there was just a million things. It was just like, I was just so shy. I mean, I don't know how to, like,
do you think the cerebral palsy played a role in that?
I mean, yeah, it was it's a lot easier, I found, to like just get up in front of people and just, like, if you feel like a freak, then you just, like, act like a freak, and everyone just is like, that's what it is. But it's hard to be like, if you feel like a freak inside, like, do something beautiful.
That's really interesting. And so that really held you back from doing what you wanted to do?
Yeah, I didn't really have any, like, I didn't really have any examples that could show me that I don't know. I always had, like, little demos, and I'd, like, play for my friends or, like, record, like, little, you know, like, little things and show people here and there. But then actually to, like, get to the point, I'm 31, and it took me this long to, like, actually write songs.
What did you think? That people would make fun of you or they wouldn't accept you? What did you think?
I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things that just, it's, like, played in your head. Like, even when we wrote our demo, and it was like, I wanted to do it in things in certain ways. And then we didn't, you know, like, then kind of kept it, like, live. And we were just kind of partying and doing a lot of stuff. And just kind of kept it wild. And then we, like, went and recorded another 7-inch. And I kind of, like, still felt like I needed to, like, yell, even though I wanted to, like, sing.
And then there was, overcompensating?
Yeah, and there was just things in my head, like, I was like, okay, well, everyone, like, headbangs, like, Junebug headbangs, like, in the band, you know? And, like, if I'm singing, like, pretty, you know, like, no one's going to like that. Like, no one in the band's even going to like that. I don't know. It's just, like, weird things of understanding. But then I'm like, okay, well, if you listen to, like, if you're in the van with us and you listen to the music that we listen to, it's like, no one really listens to, like, heavy music. So.
What are you guys listening to, ABBA on the road? Don't say that's true.
No. Okay. Someone requested, we DJ'd the other night and someone was requesting ABBA.
Oh, yeah. Are there other examples of people who are either front men or women in a band or even in any prominent position in a band who have a disability?
Every once in a while, there's like some f-ing A ends with a hole that will hit a f-ing, be like, yeah. There's like some.
That's how he's our cowbell man.
There is people that will be like, well, what about this band? And it's like,
ooh,
some,
like the drummer from Def Leppard?
Obscure. Right. Well, right.
I mean, that's the only example I can come up with.
Right. Well, and that's
and he was
like,
a drummer.
And that's the question. And that's is what's difficult. And like, it's kind of like a weird because I understand, like, I get everyone's like battle internally or externally, you know? But there's plenty of bands with, like, females that you can look up to and love, and they're f***ing awesome. There's plenty of, like, bands with, like, people of color. There's plenty of, like, all these bands that you can look up to, like, to where if you are, like, if you are a female and you want to play in a band, there's a million f***ing good bands to, like, look at, and there's a million, like, good things. But then for me, it's, like, who, especially a front man, though. And the front man, like you're always told, or the front person is supposed to be like good looking and in shape and in like this and that. And it's like supposed to be like kind of the face of it, you know? And so it's like it's easier for me to feel comfortable in like a hardcore band or in like a really weird punk band and just be screaming my head off or just spitting all over myself or doing something rather than to be like, I'm going to sing you this very beautiful song, you know, because There isn't an example, and I haven't really ever seen one. And so it is hard. It was hard. And, it, like, I mean, we've been doing this, like, long enough now. It's going on, like, 5 years with basically the same crew, so I feel comfortable. And, like, more and more we're getting to just be, like, who cares? And, like, not overthink things a lot and do a lot of shit as a band. But before that, it was hard. Just, like, no examples. And then it's also hard to be, like, the person now that is, like, an example. Because it's, like, I don't know. Until the last, like, year or two, I've never even, like, really talked to someone else with cerebral palsy. Because I've just never, there's not that many of us, you know? So it's not like you're, like, going to school, like, oh, yo, what's up? Like, you have it too? Like, what do you know? Like, oh, that's crazy. And, like, and there's no real perks. I mean, other than like a handicap placard, and we get to park.
Do you have
some
one?
Other? Yeah, hell yeah, I have
Dude,
one.
It's great on tour.
It's
we
great.
Get to park where we want. It's wonderful.
And you don't have to pay for a meter, but you like, don't have to pay for a meter. And that's like, and totally like, me and Barbara, my girlfriend, will be like, you know, go park somewhere, like looking for a parking spot, and there'll be like a handicap spot, and they'll be like. Yeah, perks, you know, yeah. But like other
Even
than that,
to the airport, we get to jump the line
every once in a while. Every once in a while, like there's a bunch of times where they don't, and I'm like, you're a-hole, but then so it's like it's weird to talk about with anyone really because there's not anything that's like there's not anything positive about it. It's like the only. A lot of the things I see people standing up for is, like I mentioned before, like women or people of color or your sexual orientation and stuff. And that's badass. It's like, I'm gay. Hell yeah. You know, like that's fucking cool. And then, but for, it's like, oh, you have cerebral palsy. It's like, hell yeah. You know, it's like, no. That's fucking sucks. But, and there's nothing. That can be done to make it better.
The condition. Yeah, nothing.
Yeah, there's nothing. I mean, I could do physical therapy, you know, I could be doing things to like help it, but then now we're on the road all the time, and there's no...
Is it a painful condition?
Yeah, I mean, it's like all the muscles on the right side of my body are, like, tight, and my brain... It's like my brain telling my the right side of my body to do something. It's, like, slower, you know? Like, so it's, like, the left side...
Oh, wow, yeah. He's moving his
I'm hands. Moving my hands to, like, show the difference, but it but...
But I'll say something, and I don't know, maybe if you've heard this before, maybe you haven't, or maybe it's embarrassing, but I'm just going to say it because I think it's worth saying that I actually think that what you're doing is incredibly important. It's a big deal. That's why I want my son to meet you, because I think it's a really big deal that you can... I think this band is going to get really big. That's the kiss of death, by the way. I shouldn't have said that. I apologize. I once predicted to my brother still teases me. My little brother, I dragged him in front of the TV one day and pointed out some random band. He still remembers the name, Platinum Blonde. And I was like, watch this band. They're going to be big. And I was like, 10, 7 or whatever. And they, of course, did not become big. So I wish upon you everything that Platinum Blonde did not achieve.
Does it seem that a lot of your decisions have led you to a lot of great things?
I appreciate that. Thank you. I think. I mean, you guys are incredible, and I think that it never even crossed my mind that just what you said. Of course, we need bands with all sorts of people who are celebrated for who they are and what they can do, and we've never had anybody with a disability. And again, I loved you even before I knew that. But it strikes me as immediately and obviously incredibly important.
Yeah. I mean, because it is. And it's shit that pisses me off. And not for, like, the negative way, but there's so many, like, you know, there'll be, like, a Coachella or, like, a festival, and then someone will do, like, the... Look at how many females are in the bands that are playing. You know, it's like, and the numbers are like crazy. And it's like, name one f-ing person of one f-ing festival that's not us now. You know, like one.
There
one.
Isn't. I mean, there is the drummer for Def Leppard. That's what it is.
He's not playing Coachella. No. You know, like what I mean? Like, they should be on every f-ing festival to even out the ratio of everything. Or like... We've even, like, even on the Joyce Manor Waves tour thing, there was, like, this...
Those are two other bands they toured with. Just because our audience, audience won't
We did this
bands.
Tour with a band called Joyce Manor and Waves. And we were going to be on the tour, but then there was, like, this thing that was, like, well, we're afraid of, like, it being, like, too all-male, and so we might need to, like, do something. And it was, like, again, like, wait... Okay, so we can't be on it because we're all men, but then I'm not, like, advocating anything. And then even when the tour got, like, announced, there was other people being, like, this other band, there's, like, this other band that I won't name, but when I see them in person, I'm going to f***ing call them out on all this. But it was like, oh, yeah, well, this tour is, like, all males, but, like, if you look at these tours that are all just, like, taking away from, like, what actually we're doing, and the fact of, like, getting in a van, riding in a van, like, every venue that we play has nothing but stairs. Like, getting on the stage is just stairs, and a lot of times they don't even have stairs.
Yeah,
you know, it's like
it's crazy.
So nothing's, like, pull them up.
It was just a stage up against the back of the venue, and there's just nothing there.
Just
and,
for,
like,
the record, let me just have you, because you're just say your name just so people can recognize the voice.
I'm John.
John,
aka Junebug.
Yeah, we call him Junebug.
Guitar player,
yeah.
Yes. Noisemaker.
Yes. And the person who's dropping the A bombs on this on this
with
podcast.
Cursor.
Yes, yeah. Cursor in chief. But so sometimes you just can't physically get on the stage.
Yeah, I mean, because the stage will be like...
We got to build stairs sometimes for him. Like, we'll take, like, road cases and put them there so he can, like, use those.
Because, I mean, it won't... The stage, it doesn't even need to be... It doesn't need to be that high to be too high for me. I mean, and it's shit that only people with disabilities, I feel like, would understand, kind of, in a way. Or unless you've, like, broke your leg or it's something, it's like... It's, like, anxiety. It gives me anxiety just knowing that I'm going to have to, like, get up on a stage that I can't get up on. It gives me anxiety while I'm on stage knowing that I'm going to have to, like, get off. Like, we're going to have to play a show and then, like, do this thing. And then everyone's going to have to, like, literally watch me, like, crawl off this stage. But then, like, bands will be on tour and be like, there's no multi-gender bathroom in this venue and stuff. And it's like, it's not handicapped accessible at all. And literally, like, if I threw a fit, or if handicapped people of the world threw a fit, half of the, like, more than half of the venues
would be shut down.
But I love music, you know? So it's like, I just want somewhere to play.
Do you get anxiety about what people are going to think of you?
Yeah, a lot.
Because I would imagine people who like your band show up to a show and are not expecting to see somebody with
some people roles. Don't get it either. Like, they just they don't know that he has that condition, and they just think he's, like, wasted. We get a lot of tweets all the time. It's like, I saw Culture Beast, but the singer's wasted.
And he
it's
couldn't like, even stand up straight.
Yeah, and it's like, that's you know, not what's like, going on here.
But then sometimes it will, I'll just, like, and it will, kind of going back to, like, what we were talking about, is just, like, I will get wasted. Just to be like, well, you think that I'm a freak, I'm going to act like a freak. You know, and even like, I mean, the smallest things, and it sounds so silly, and I never like really want to like admit it really ever, but it's like, even just like meeting people, or like, you know, someone likes our band, and then so we like go to meet them, and I don't want to like let anyone down ever.
Part of you think, okay, I this guy, this ABC News loser liked my band, and, you know, we show up, and but maybe I hadn't done any research, and I would be somehow disappointed when I saw you? Is that
the
type of thing?
No, because I figured, like, someone like you could just exploit it, you know? Like, more.
Wait, I was like, is that a joke?
No, I mean, but now, you know, like, no, not like that. Like, more like the cool dude, you know? Because, like, that's the thing, and I've talked about it before. It's like, I feel like it's a good, like, people tester, you know? It's like, I know when I make someone feel uncomfortable. And it's usually the people that are insecure with themselves are the ones that obviously feel, like, uncomfortable around me.
It's like a litmus test.
Yeah, kind of, like, because it is, like, the one that's, like, you know, like, the person that's, like, the most puffed up. Kind of like, you know how, I mean, growing up, you learn these things. Everyone does, like, kind of like, it's like the louder you yell, the less you have something to say. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a lot of times, like, those people are the ones that are like, oh, I'm like kind of, you know, it's like, I mean, now our band's getting bigger, so it, like, doesn't really.
They can't say anything to you now.
Right. Right, or like the like, yo, dude, and you're like, no, I know, I like that's the other thing that's crazy is there's like a million people that it's like, you didn't give a fuck about me, you didn't care, like you, I don't know, and then now,
oh, I see. Like
now people, that the like, band's like bigger, then it's like, dude, you've been my dog, like my whole, you know, like and you're like,
yeah,
like no, I mean but that's probably for for everyone, not even
woodwork. Okay, we'll say your name now.
Shane.
Stainer.
AKA bass. Sean.
He plays bass.
AKA Shambles. AKA
Stain.
Stain.
Living in Shambles.
He's got a lot of nicknames.
We change his name. We actually just call him by a different name. They usually all start with S.
Yeah.
Just so.
And that just sticks.
Bro. I can imagine where called, that gives you a lot of possibilities.
There's a lot, yeah.
And
yeah,
he's called himself. He's even.
Introduce himself.
Introduce himself in the wrong name because we've called him the wrong name for so long.
So you're saying people come out of the woodwork now?
Oh, yeah. Kind of going back to what you were saying, like this dude who plays in a metal band and has up and is kind of in that scene came up and was like, yo, dude, like I was working at a bar and your band came on and this dude who I was working with only plays like pop punk, you know? And he's like, I hate everything that he plays. And then your music came on. And I was like, holy shit, like I actually enjoy this. Like this is good. But he was like, I like it because you guys like are you. Like because I, like he knows that like, you know, I live in a green room at the bar I work at. Like because we all struggle.
You do?
Yeah. Like, you know, we all kind of struggled to get here.
So you live in the green room, meaning, in other words, this is a bar, the green room where performers go to unwind before they go on.
Yes.
You live in that.
I live in that. Mm-hmm.
That speaks to a level of real struggle in order to do what you're doing.
Yeah, but, you know, it's kind of weird to hear, like, from someone who, like, didn't really, one of fucked with our band or like really given a shit, you know. He was like kind of one of those like SF cool guys, you know.
SF for him, cool the, guys meaning San Francisco like, cool guys. Yeah, yes. For people over 30.
For those who don't know the slang. And he was like going on about how much he liked the record, but really his main focus was because he like knew me. Or, you know, or like knew that like we're selling out. Maybe, like, in as he said it, like, where you guys are selling out, but you're, like, still cool. And it's, like, this ethos in San Francisco, like, what Dave was talking about. Like, it's, like, the more you struggle as an artist, the more respect you get there, you know? And the, if you create something and you're, like, well off, it's, like, oh, well, you're – it's, like, not worth it.
But then a million people, like, that are well off will claim. I mean, we were talking about this. Yeah. There's like one band that's like talking about the struggles of San Francisco, and we know that they like live with their girlfriend rent free, and then like, Shane's living in a green room of a bar just so we can like go on tour whenever we can and make whatever we can.
You have a major label record deal, and you're living in the green room of a bar.
But it's just starting out.
It's only the first record.
Yeah.
And it's only Shane.
So. Oh, right. Fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah. It's only me.
Yeah.
Like, it's strange that a lot of people think that. They're like, oh, but you guys are signed. Like, how, like, well, I never have money to do anything. And, like, I can't, you know, we're broke. And, like, you know, people are like, but you guys are signed. And it's like, yeah, but they're not giving us money. Yeah. Like,
at this stage,
the record's only been out for a month so far.
That's not how it works.
Everything, there will be a day, you know, like, hopefully soon, it's like, oh, my God. Like, I mean, even, I mean.
We came here hoping there was going to be catering so we could eat today.
That's the only reason.
Yeah.
Let me just, a few more questions based on that article I had read about you. You talked about some of the, I think it was your term, like, self-hatred that came about from having this condition. You even went so far, your girlfriend's in the room, you said something like, you've even had moments of like, did I get this beautiful woman because the band's a hit and it's despite or, you know, like overlooking this disability.
Yeah.
That's the level of insecurity it can create.
Yeah, I mean, because like, I mean, we talk about like bands and bands with disabilities or how, it's like, what... What's name a movie where the main character, who everyone thinks is f-ing cool and gets all the girls, is disabled? You know, does that make sense?
Yes, like, it's hard to project yourself like, into a heroic
So even
situation.
Growing up in another, and not even like heroic, like even just like in, like, cool. what's one movie where there's a disabled person in it and he's cool, or he saves the day, or, I don't know, in a way, it's like you grow up like not, but then going back to like, if you're a female, like there's plenty of movies to like, you know, watch where you can feel empowered and you can feel like relate to someone. I mean, growing up, everyone would like make Forrest Gump jokes at me, you know.
So you get bullied?
Here and there.
Kind joking or?
No, I mean, well, a lot of people will kind joke with me. You know, when I was, like, younger, I was, like, ha, you know, like a little more insecure and would, like, let it slide. And now more and more it's kind of like, okay, that's not funny. And it's one of those things, like, where I'll joke around about things sometimes and then people think that they can just, like, joke around about it. And it's like, you can't say that. You know, like, totally one of those situations. But yeah, going back to, like, I don't know. Yeah, like, there was nothing in my life ever that showed me that there was success for growing up with the condition and the life that I had.
Was there something about your life beyond the condition that was challenging?
I grew up like outside of Yosemite, like out of dirt road in like a literal like a one bedroom cabin, like that's probably, it's not even as big as this whole room.
This room we're in is reasonably big, but not huge.
But one room. I slept on the couch till I was 19 years old. And, like, my parents' bed was probably, like,
and
not even that far away. Yeah. And they're still together. And they rule in there. It's, like, so supportive.
So
but
a
we
loving
didn't
family.
Have, loving family, but we didn't have, like, any money. I mean, we couldn't get cable. They still don't have internet. They're just, my parents don't know what YouTube is or Netflix or...
Dude,
or,
watching his mom try and FaceTime him the other day was brutal.
She got an iPad.
It was like the classic, like, mom, you gotta... You're too close. Like, yeah. Flip
There's
the camera.
A button
like,
in the just, corner.
But yeah, it was probably not even like half... Like, smaller than half of this room. And it's just like a log cabin. And then... My parents got, like, a Volkswagen bus, and every day after school, I would just go sit in the Volkswagen bus and, like, play acoustic guitar.
It paid off, man. Yeah. Or it is paying off. I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, in terms of... It's paying off in my benefit, because I have great music to listen to. I don't know if it's actually literally paying off for you in terms of economics, oh. But...
I mean, the check's in the mail.
I hope. Have them wire deposit that thing. Much more of our conversation right after this quick break.
Brought to you by Indeed. Used by over 3 million businesses for hiring, where business owners and HR professionals can post job openings with screener questions, then sort, review, and communicate with candidates from an online dashboard. Learn more at Indeed.com/hire.
There's a lot coming at you right now. Turmoil, tweets, an insane amount of chatter. I'm Brad Milkey with ABC News, and I am here to throw you a lifeline. It's a new podcast called Start Here, where our experts give you on-the-ground access to the biggest stories of the day. We're going to give you some context, some clarity among the chaos. 20 minutes every weekday. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, and start here.
So the song that my son's obsessed with is Be Kind to the Bugs. Although he calls it Be Kind to the Bees. And he's not wrong about that because those are literally the first words of the song. It's rare to hear a song on a record like this that appears to be about kindness to yourself and others. Am I misreading the meaning of the song? Can you just walk me through what you're trying to say on that song?
I don't know. I feel like a lot of the songs are just like – a lot of the songs like are like slightly negative – and slightly positive. It's kind of like the lyrics or the emotion is like kind of how you thought processing a lot of things, you know? So it's literally like, I don't know, in the I read Siddhartha, like, or the Hermann Hesse book, you know, and I know that a lot of people have read it years before, like in high school or something. But like I read it and it was kind of like about, you know, like the less you have, like the more... It's like almost, I don't know, it's hard to explain, but...
Oh, meaning that it's kind of an argument. I haven't read the book in about 10 years. I read it as a grown-up, but it was a while ago. But maybe the message was something along the lines of having too much, which we think is going to make us happy, actually doesn't make us happy.
Yeah, I mean, and he, you know, he like goes through and he's like a Buddhist and is trying to search for enlightenment and goes like without anything for so long. And then he like goes into town and he meets a woman and the woman wants someone with money and stuff and he can like save up his money because he never had money, so then he doesn't spend it because he never had, you know, like it's like all the things like you can acquire, like the less you have and the more you're okay with it, then like the more you can accomplish because you never really had anything. And it's also in the same sense of like being like the less you expect, like the, you know, like you're never let down if you expect nothing. I don't know. We were like, everyone's talking about like the bees crisis and how something like so small can like affect the whole universe. And so it was just kind of like talking about like, originally the words were be kind to the bees, be kind to the bugs, be cautious of people, be careful with drugs. Cause it was still like, I'm not saying that you have to like, just be, you still need to like watch out for people because like, you know.
But that's a very different message than the, can you say the current lyric?
Well, and then Brett Gurewitz, the owner of Epitaph, was like, no, you need to change it to conscious of people because you say be cautious of people, be careful with drugs. That's the same thing. Cautious and careful is the same thing. And I was like, yeah, no, but that's not what I'm trying to like say. But he did like, and I feel like an advocate of being conscious, trying to be conscious of a lot of people. But so the first verse actually says, be conscious of people. And the second one says, cautious.
Oh, really?
Because I kept it the same. You know, just like kind of have my own like little, like, ha, it's still
give it
in
to
there.
The man.
You know, like,
I should say Epitaph is the record label.
Greatest record label in the world.
Of course. That goes without saying. Yes, these guys are rolling in it. Thank you, Epitaph.
Covered in
so,
jewels.
So it really wasn't initially a song about kindness to other humans. It was more like be nice to animals, but
kind of like take care of yourself.
Uh-huh.
Like be just aware of your surroundings, but then also like, and then the chorus is kind of like, I mean, we were living like just bouncing around kind of in the Bay Area, and there was at one point where I had was in the middle of a move and like took everything, like open up a storage unit, put like a lot of stuff in the storage unit, and then took like every single piece of clothing that I had, every camera, every like all my shit that I loved, I put it in my car and like had it, and like I didn't have anywhere to stay. I was like crashing on someone's couch, and I don't really know why I did it or why I do a lot of stupid things, but then my car got broken into that night, and they stole every piece of clothes that I had except the ones that were on my back. They stole like every camera I had, everything, every photo, every possession that you cared for. They stole it, you know? And so it was like, it kind of like crushed me, and it kind of like changed my whole like outlook on the world, like kind of put me in like a depression too, because I didn't have like anything. I wasn't living anywhere. But then kind of coming through it on the other side, it's like now it's like we'll purge all the time. Like, you know, or like me and Barbara, like we'll be in my room and like I'll just like I don't need this. And one of my friends told
me. Barbara's your girlfriend.
Barbara's my girlfriend. And we'll totally do these things like a purging, you know, like we call it. And it's just like, because now it's like you can go without anything and be fine, you know, for the most part.
There's
having
a whole
somewhere
movie about this on Netflix.
Minimalism.
Yes.
Yeah,
I'm in that movie actually.
Does it bring joy to my life? Right, yes, that's basically the question that you asked.
But wait, let me just say who you. This is a new voice.
Yeah, hello, I'm Ross.
Ross is
the
drummer.
Drums. Yeah.
Yes. By the way, you're a really good drummer. This is the only instrument I know how to play, and you are really good.
Hey, all right.
Were you on both records?
Yes.
Because the style changed a little bit between the first and second record. Your style.
Definitely, yeah. We were working.
This is a crazy trend, digression here. Sorry. Go ahead.
Just working with, some different people on Bay Dream, the newer album. Just like having different ideas come in, you know, and trying to not necessarily steer it in like a, I don't know. It was more like it felt there was parts that were.
On the first record, I mean, it was awesome, but I felt like you were showing your chops in a way that on the second
record
you
held back. Just like explosive,
yes,
bombastic, like go nuts and just like fill every 2 seconds and just be like crazy, you know, play as heavy and as hard as I could. And then the next one was more like we had some help with someone being like, let's maybe like not do like a crazy fill every, you know, 5 seconds and like be more thoughtful on where we put these parts, and it definitely like kind of tamed it down a little bit, but I think it served the song in a good way. So
it was our first time working with like a producer too.
So the first record was just you.
Just us, just and then us, yeah, then yeah.
And a friend.
And a friend recording it. So like Dave basically produced it.
Yeah.
But like this guy's like, you know, that's what he does for a living,
yeah,
producing. So he was
some crazy act, so.
Yeah.
But it was kind of like this thing of like, you know, you're like, we're a fucking punk, and you fucking bash the shit out of it, and you go, and then, like, kind of where we talked about at the beginning is, like, growing as a musician. It's like, you listen to the Ramones, they're not even necessarily, like, just bashing the hell. Like, you listen to the Ramones, and you want to, like, you know, you get, at least me, like, I get fired up, and you want to, like, you know, you feel, like, the energy that you feel from punk, but he's not screaming, he's not bashing the drums, you know, so it's like, if we were doing a song like Be Kind to the Bugs and Ross is like, bah, 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 you know, it's like, that doesn't really,
that
you know?
Right.
So it's kind of like more trying to play to the actual song rather than like, before it was like still trying to like, was afraid of taking the actual step of just being like, fuck it. And we're still trying to like make a crazy punk record, you know, and like thinking about like, I want kids to mosh, you know, still. Or
this
like,
is moshable music. It's just catchy.
Yeah, yeah.
To make it more like in the pocket, I guess, you know, like this drummer Hal Blaine is like part of the Wrecking Crew, and he's like one of my favorite drummers, and it's just he recorded on like all that Phil Spector stuff, Wall of Sound, you know, like and like just like thousands of like hit songs, you know, and just like a very pocket drummer, and just
define in the pocket for folks.
I guess it's just like capturing more of a vibe rather than like yeah, like Dave was saying, just trying to like just show your chops or whatever, or just like be like, this is how good I am, or you know, it's like I don't know, how would you guys describe
playing
pocket,
like I guess like playing more like reserved instead of just doing as much as you can all the time, you know, and
yeah, not so showy, less smart kind of.
Well, and in the pocket it's like to me like kind of when you do anything like creatively and you feel like in tune with it all, you know, it's like kind of like we also tracked the drums last.
We recorded
when we recorded, we did some scratch drums. I mean, we actually like looked up, did our research, and like one of the big things for the new record was like I kind of wanted to go for like a Sly and the Family Stone feel or like Paul Simon feel, and we like
that is not what came to mind when I was listening to it because to me it sounds like catchy. I hear notes of Strokes, Nirvana. Maybe a little Pixies, maybe a little Hold Steady.
Hold Steady, what up?
Craig Finn.
He was there last night. Craig,
yeah, the singer is our boy.
He's fantastic.
He's the best.
Yes.
We're playing a show with them coming up soon.
Really? Here in New York?
San Francisco.
All right, so I usually do this first, but let's do it last. Meditation. Any experience with meditation?
Yeah, I mean, not as much as I should.
We have people of all levels of experience that don't get sheepish.
There's this thing called Against the Stream.
Oh yeah, I know Against the Stream.
And it was pretty close to like where we were living in San Francisco. And
can you just define it for folks? Tell people what it is.
It's this dude who wrote the book, The Dharma Punks.
Dharma Punks. So it's Adam Levine. Is that his name? No, what's his name?
Noah
Levine. Right. He wrote a book called Dharma Punks, and he started basically, which is like a kind of a lineage, a school of. Kind of a modern school of Buddhism, which is focused on people kind of in the punk rock community and recovery. And one of the teachers is based in L.A. now, Joanna Harper, who's been on this podcast and is part one of the teachers on the 10% Happier app as well. So I'm definitely familiar with their work. They do great stuff. So one of their outposts was close to where you were living in San Francisco?
Yeah, in San Francisco and in L.A. too. I've been down there. And it's pretty cool because they do, like, guided meditations, but it's also, like, some, like, tattooed punk dude who's like, yeah, you know, like, I'm just, like, f***ing think about, like, in my head, you know, like, where you're, like, it doesn't you can kind of, like, relate and you can kind of, like, let your guard down when you feel, like, a little bit more comfortable, you know?
Because you're not surrounded by aging hippies or robe gurus or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, or someone that's, like, yeah, if you feel like judged or you feel like you're just stinking up the place, you know, like you might be a little more reserved. But so, and then one of our friends too, who's a director who lives in New York City too, his name is Rob Susi, and he really meditates like every morning. Like we did a couple road trips where he like drove across the United States, like in a car helping our friend move, and like I'd wake up wherever we were, like, in the morning, and he'd be, like, 7 in the morning, like, against the wall, like, actually meditating, you know? And it was, like, he kind of, like, there was a few people in my life that made me feel like it was, like, okay and cool and helped to understand. It's, like, of course, to, like, take time in your life to, like, just stop for a second, you know? Especially, like, if you're living in New York City or living in San Francisco or we're living in L.A., it's, like, there's something all the f***ing time. You know, like, growing up where I grew up, it's, like, it's quiet. It's, like, out by Yosemite, you know? So it's, like, even if you're not meditating, you are, kind of, because you can just actually sit there. We didn't have, like, cable or internet or anything, so you are just, like, at times just there, like, with yourself or with nothing, you know? But then now it's, like, yeah. I understand the importance of it, but
have you made it a regular practice in any way?
No, No.
But you do get yourself together to go once in a while, it sounds like.
Yeah, or try. And it's kind of like one of those, it's a fucked up thing with doing what we do, because it's like, you're always like, okay, like I'm gonna do this, and then there's all this shit that we do nonstop. Like, we were in Europe last week, and then the day that we got back, we had to drive down to LA and play some secret show for a bunch of like music supervisors, and then the next week after that, we flew out to here, and then the next week we're like doing this, and then the week after that we're like do this, and yeah, so it's like you make all these plans or these like ideas or things that you need to do, whether it's like meditation or physical therapy or something, and then before you know it, it's been a year and we've just been like gone.
I think you got to give yourself a break. I mean you're riding something here, you got to just see it through,
right?
Although I would say meditation is more portable and easier to do on the road than physical therapy, probably.
A friend of mine recommended Headspace when I was on tour.
Headspace is great. I'm partial to 10% Happier as an app, but
so can we get that? Does that cost money, 10% Happier?
Not for you, it won't cost
money. Hey! Free subscription!
That's great.
I feel like Oprah. You get a car. You get a car. So what if anything, like, why is it attractive to you? I mean, you talked a little bit about this, but what, if anything, did it do for you on the times where you have done it? What about it speaks to you other than the fact that in this and against the stream they have tats?
growing up where I did grow up, it's like I'm used to, like, I don't know, I need, like, some time here and there to just, like, I mean, everyone does, of course, but, and then just to, like, kind of, I don't know, it's like everyone needs sleep, you know, like everyone needs some, like, time.
I mean, we're besieged all the time with information all the time. You're moving around, and the brain needs to, you need to teach it how to focus, you need to teach it how to not be distracted, which is another thing you sing about in Be Kind to the Bugs. So, yeah, it's important to do it just the same way you got to work on your body. Does anybody else here have an interest in it? You were talking about Headspace.
A friend, this is Ross. On the last tour recommended Headspace, and I downloaded the app. I think we were in Seattle and just did like a 3-minute or 5-minute exercise to start, just at a cafe I just kind of like walked to. And it was crazy because I didn't really know what to expect, but it actually, like, had this sort of like Zen feeling come over me, which is kind of sort of cheesy to say. I don't know, but
when you say Zen feeling, what do you mean by that specifically?
I don't know. Just like the breathing exercises, like, it's hard to describe because it's something that I've never done, or, you know, it's like.
Did you keep up with it?
I did a little bit, yeah, like on tour. I definitely noticed after the first one that there was like a noticeable difference, and I almost kind of was so relaxed that I fell asleep for a little bit in that cafe, or like kind of just like sort of lost track of time for a second and had to get back to the venue or whatever. But then like
And then we're probably like, what the fuck, Rock,
what are you? Yeah. Like, what the hell?
Get over here. Get over here right now.
Yeah. But then,
David,
I don't know.
Can, like, David be a diva?
Oh, we can all be divas.
Group diva. Hive diva, yeah.
You want a seat?
Yeah, man, I want some more rock and roll behavior up in here.
So, yeah, I would try to get away, you know, and like, just like touring is just such like a mental, you got to like give yourself some space alone. And just like, personally, I like just like going on walks or whatever, like getting lost and having that time alone. So like to add that to it, I think helped a lot. And then I tried to start it. So I did it a few more times on tour, but it's just like hard in the van, especially as related to, I tried to do it in a van once and it was just like, I couldn't get comfortable. You know, you really need to like, you're kind of like on this, a bench seat that's just not comfortable at all, or like the floor or wherever you're sleeping.
You actually sleep in the van?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
that's where I get most of my sleep.
Your baseline is a green room.
Yeah,
you don't have a driver's license.
I don't have a driver's license. Well, see, my parents like dipped out on me when I was 16.
What does that mean?
Left, pretty much.
Both,
like,
of your parents?
Well, my mom moved across the country from Santa Rosa to like somewhere in Philadelphia. I don't even know really where she went. And then my dad's like, he was living in an RV. He couldn't really like take care of me and my sister. So like, never had a car, like never really
you know, I've been homeless pretty much since 16, like kind of living places for like months at a time before me and my shithead friends got evicted or like, you know. But I guess like I was having this experience that I was at work and it was just when I moved into the green room. And I had I was like freaking out over something and I was like having a really hard time. And my coworker was like, give me your phone. Give me your headphones. Like, give me anything that will distract you and go sit up there with the lights off. And I will tell you when to come down. And she like locked me in this room with nothing. And I think that was like my first experience with like actually slowing down and like kind of like thinking about like all the things that have happened and like how I get to the point where I almost feel like I'm gonna have a panic attack, you know? Mm-hmm. And then that's something now that I try to do. I don't do it regularly, you know, because I just usually don't have a dark space to sit in alone, you know?
You don't need that, by the way.
Yeah, you don't. You don't. I don't think I have I haven't gotten to the place where I can create that box, you know?
We should talk about that, because actually I think one of the biggest obstacles to meditation, first of all, what happened to you with your parents is terrible, so I just want to acknowledge that. That sucks. But the second thing is that I think one of the natural, so this is not a criticism, one of the natural obstacles that people have to meditation is that we think we need to reach some special state of calm or zen or imperturbability. But actually, really what meditation is about is being okay with whatever's there. Mm-hmm. The point is not to be unnaturally or bulletproof imperturbability or whatever. The point is actually to be able to surf the chaos instead of drowning it.
Yeah,
and
totally.
So you can do meditation on an uncomfortable chair. You can do meditation in a smelly van, wherever. Really all it is paying close attention to whatever's happening without getting yanked around by it. So yeah. Usually we start with your breath. You feel what your breath feels like coming in and going out. And then when you get distracted, you start again and again and again. And that may not feel like being in a dark room where things are really calm. Mm. What it may feel like is, wow, my mind is insane.
Yeah.
But seeing the insanity allows you not to be owned by
it. Totally.
And that is the game.
Yeah.
That's the game. And I try not to be too much of a proselytizer, but it sounds like it could be useful since you're already gravitating toward it naturally.
Yeah. Yeah. Or just having people see, like, if you kind of just – because I feel like one of the things, like Dave says, like, we just haven't stopped since we've started this. And there's so many things that happen that I feel like I don't have time to really look at and be like, okay, that happened, you know? Or, like, it's just kind of like, okay, that happened. Put it into the back of my mind, and then because everything else is just happening just as fast. So I think that is like that is a practice that I think would be useful for me to actually look back and like be okay with the things that have happened instead of just like, oh, I'm not gonna think about it, you know?
Yeah, because you know what, even if you tell yourself you're not thinking about it, it's there.
It's there.
And exactly. It's acting on you blindly.
Exactly, yeah.
It's driving you in a blind way. So it's like, you know, I mean, there are lots of modalities. Meditation is not a miracle. I'm for all of them, you know, the medication, therapy, physical exercise. Mm. Like there are a bunch of ways to get at the pain of the human condition.
Can you describe like your typical like practice for like just in every day? Like,
yeah. So for me, it's basically sit in a reasonably quiet place. But if it's not that quiet, I actually will just pipe a little white noise into my headphones and close my eyes. And or if like I'm in an airport and I don't want to sit there and be obviously meditating, I can just have my headphones in and kind of gaze softly at a neutral spot on the ground. And then all you're doing is bringing your full attention to the feeling of your breath coming in and going out. So you're not actually thinking about your breath. You're just
acknowledging it.
Feeling it.
Yeah.
You're feeling the raw data of the rising and falling of your belly or the air coming in and out of your nose. And then you will very quickly get violently distracted over and over and over and by random thoughts, by powerful emotions, by whatever. And that's actually part of the game. It's not a failure. The moment you see that you've become distracted is the moment you are meditating correctly. Because the game is to see over and over and over how wild the mind is so that that wildness doesn't drive you all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's just like a process of getting familiar with your actual life. Because most of the time, most of the things we do that are most embarrassing or most negative are when we're owned by our ego. The ego has you, you know, like eating stuff you don't need to eat or taking drugs you don't need to take or saying things in a relationship that are more toxic than you need to say. And actually, you, with meditation, with more self-awareness, with more familiarity of the, with your own mind, you can kind of see the storm coming before it fully hits, makes landfall, and you're done. You're off and running. You're, you know, seven paragraphs deep into a argument with your significant other that you didn't need to have. So it's not foolproof. I mean, I make really dumb mistakes all the time. I think I make fewer of them than I used to. And that's largely just because I can kind of see, oh, I'm getting angry before, whereas the anger would hit and I was off.
Right.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
Totally, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the guys that
this is David talking
against the stream. Yeah. This is David.
Yeah.
One of the guys at the against the stream spot said some one time, he was like, "I just imagine like taking a sponge and just like scrubbing my brain," and like that was like one that was like I really liked, and I like imagine like even just scrubbing all the little nooks and crannies of your like little mushy brain.
And the thing about cleaning anything is you're going to get in touch with some pretty ugly stuff.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Like, I think a lot of people get in touch with that ugly stuff, or even if it's just completely mundane, you know, thinking about what's for lunch. People see that happening and think, I think it was you who said at the beginning, before we started rolling, you said you tried meditation once and it failed. Was it you? Or
yeah,
said
that?
Yeah. By the way, say your name.
I'm Nick.
Nick has not spoken yet. Nick is meditating over there.
trying to.
Trying.
10% happier app.
That's right.
Ding.
Thank you.
I feel like David should have smiled and there would be a little glint off of his teeth. Yeah. People have this moment where they see, oh my God, I'm thinking about all this crazy stuff.
Yeah.
I can't do this, but that is doing it.
Yeah.
That's the reframing. That's basically the foundation of this company is me just saying that over and over again. Because meditation has a huge PR problem, which is people think they can't do it. Yeah. But actually, the moment when people are thinking they can't do it is the moment they have done it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like even like coming into touch with like some of that like weird, like I don't know, I get like super scatterbrained all the time and I'm just like, my mind's in a million places at once. But even just like trying to like, yeah, just take a second to like calm down, and like when you hear those things, you're like, oh yeah, that's weird. And like, you know, just like looking at it differently, I guess.
Absolutely, but what you described as your mind's all over the place,
yeah,
that is a symptom of being a human being.
Yeah,
that is just nothing more than that. There's a spectrum. Some people have wilder minds for a variety of internal or external reasons, but like. We descended from nervous monkeys who were always looking out for threats or food. Yeah. And that's just the mind we have.
Like, yeah.
And so no point getting nervous about
it. Threats or food. It's like, is this going to hurt me? Or,
or can I eat it? Junebug looks like he's in. Let's finish with you. Have you done any meditating? Or?
I've never been to a class or anything like that, but there's definitely been times where I've been so incredibly stressed out in life because life is crazy as shit and on the point of having a panic attack or whatever, just like my mind is doing a million things and I'll just go outside and just sit there and just close my eyes and just, I guess, yeah, just kind of pay more attention to my breathing than anything that's going on around me.
That's it.
And it helps, yeah. And I'll just do it for like, I don't, you know. Yeah, like 5 minutes or something. I'd listen to like the traffic or whatever. And yeah, that's like sometimes life is just so shitty that you have to not worry. You know, there's nothing I can do about some of the problems that I have. So it's like I'll just shut everything off in my head and just focus on what's happening today right now.
So what we're going to, hopefully if you use the app, which will be free for you, what we'll teach you is just like a slightly, minorly, if that's even a word, enhanced version of what you're already doing.
Hmm.
just a little bit more like disciplined version of that.
That's cool. It's a cool thing to reiterate too, that you can do meditation wherever, because I feel like that's like a lot of us have the same. It's like, oh, I don't have a space. I mean, especially because we're like, the only time that we're away from each other is like when we're taking a shit. And even like when when they're taking a shit, we know that they're taking a shit. No, you know, but so it's like that's a thing for us to like our whole lives, like pretty much, you know, because everyone's like, no one lived in a mansion. No one like, you know, ever like had their own like little space, I think, ever. Yeah. But so just to like also teach yourself that you could just be okay in the world and do it anywhere in an uncomfortable chair, you know, or like
you don't need to tell yourselves the story that you need the right conditions, because they're almost certainly not going to come.
Yeah. So and even like what you were saying earlier, it's like in my head it's always been like, oh, you reach this like Zen moment and you just like everything's okay. And it's like, yeah, but like, yeah, when you're saying it's like, no, the getting distracted is part of it. And it's like, oh, well, then maybe I have actually been successful.
There may be Zen moments, but you can't will them into existence. And
yeah,
I mean, what you described, what Ross described as being in the cafe, where actually really he did a sense of calm came over him. Great, that does happen, but that doesn't mean he did it right and you're doing it wrong. It just means like that's the situation that arose there. Yeah. And next time he meditates, that it may be the exact opposite. It doesn't matter. It's really not about becoming a better meditator, but about like being better at being alive.
Yeah,
that's the skill that you're trying to train. One last question for you guys: given that we've only heard the sort of personal narrative of David and Sean, right?
Shane.
But Sean is one of the names.
Sean's one of the names.
Okay. But literally, it sounds like I'm just gleaning from some of the comments that all of you have had personal challenges. So I guess my question is, if my prediction about the trajectory of this band is correct and that things do work out well, which I would be very surprised if they do not, won't that pose challenges of, I mean, we've seen behind the music, right? So won't that pose challenges too?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that's a big fear and something that we actually, like, kind of talk about, too. Because it's like if we can fuck up our lives with no money, like,
imagine what we can do with a lot of money.
You know, like, so, but that's the thing is, like, hopefully, and I totally understand why people do fuck up their lives bad if it's, like, the trajectory is like straight up. You don't really have a time to like be appreciative or understand what's going on or understand living, especially if you're like a lot younger too. And that's why people are f***ing is because, you know, like they haven't had to like live through any of the shit that we're living through. So hopefully, yeah, we do talk about that kind of a lot.
Well, I hope it's a problem you get to deal with.
Uh-huh.
I really do.
I feel like you could wear. We got some extra Culture Beast shirts too.
And oh, I'll
could,
wear them.
You could wear one on
ABC News.
You could. Just be like,
I mean, you could.
I'll do my best. But I definitely will wear it in public. How's that?
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. We're okay.
Let's start baby steps, baby.
Yeah. Yeah.
You guys are awesome. We've never had a podcast where we'll have to do this amount of bleeping. I just got a wah-wah look from Lauren, our producer. Thank you, guys. Really appreciate it. I love you even more now. So
appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you. Okay, that does it for another edition of the 10% Happier podcast. If you liked it, please take a minute to subscribe, rate us. Also, if you want to suggest topics you think we should cover or guests that we should bring in, hit me up on Twitter @DanBHarris. Importantly, I want to thank the people who produced this podcast, Lauren Efron, Josh Cohan, and the rest of the folks here at ABC who helped make this thing possible. We have tons of other podcasts. You can check them out at abcnewspodcasts.com. I'll talk to you next Wednesday.